you know, complete, because some people who said they were currently pregnant may not have actually been pregnant during the season, or some people that were not pregnant when they were interviewed may have been pregnant during the season, or if they said they were currently pregnant and they got vaccinated, maybe they got vaccinated the prior season. So the numbers were not quite right, and we've since had better technology, better questions, and so forth. Apt Associates individuals that worked on this with us was Sarah Ball, Dr. Sarah Ball, and Dr. John Boyle. So the race I was just talking about ranged 97 through 2008 of 8% to 19%. And at the same time, the levels among other high-risk adults was 18 to 30%. So this group was had the lowest vaccination rates probably of any recommended group in the U.S., and it was consistent for this period of time, 97 through 2008. For the 9-10 season, ACIP recommended that all pregnant women should receive both the 9-10 trivalent seasonal and the monovalent 2009 H1N1 vaccinations because pregnant women are at particularly high risk for severe disease and serious complications, including death from influenza, and because influenza vaccination can provide protection for both the women and their newborns, as well as prior to birth, they can start developing an antibody response even. According to recent information that came available. And this is the number that we talked about a little bit. Among U.S. women who were pregnant anytime August through January 9-10, 52.4% reported receiving influenza vaccination August through March, either monovalent or trivalent, based on the National 2009 H1N1 Flu Survey, which was an RDD telephone interview conducted nationwide. The purpose of this online panel survey was to estimate 10-11 mid-season influenza vaccination coverage and related factors among U.S. women 18-plus who were pregnant at any time August through the date that they completed the survey, which would have been November 11 through 22. Their sampling frame that they pulled the panel members from came from an existing census-balanced national internet panel that they've used for a number of years. They are able to determine that they contacted at least 220,000 U.S. women, 18-plus, who were invited by email or online. 6909 went to the survey website. Of those, 94% answered the screening questions, and 25% of those were eligible because of current pregnant or pregnancy since 8-1-10. And 92% of those for a final study sample of 1511 completed the survey. And this 9211 actually included 107 additional minority women, African Americans and Hispanics, to reach the target for those cells of 200 non-Hispanic black and 200 Hispanics completes. And this was 107 out of 389 who were targeted for additional recruitment online and by email. The screening questions were, what is your age? What is your gender? Are you currently pregnant? Were you pregnant at any time since August 1, 2010? Here you see those that actually went to the website called Contacts. You see the distribution geographically by the census regions and census divisions. And you can see that 94% of the 6,909 web panelists who went to the survey are included in this comparison. In this next comparison, then, we see the completes. And in both of these distributions, they were very similar to the distribution of population in the U.S. Census by division. When we looked at the African Americans and Hispanics, we saw that they were a little underrepresented. And the representation was 3 points higher for blacks and about 9 points higher for Hispanic, according to the 2008 projections to 2010 U.S. Census. And by adding the 107, they would increase both the black and the Hispanic by 3 points. And this was a little shy of the target for Hispanics, but right on for African Americans. the weighting that was done, you know, they started with, since it's a probability sample, they started initially assuming that the weight for each pregnant woman was 1. Then they rake these weights to bring the sum of the weighted numbers of women in each age group to add to the estimated population total of women in the U.S. And then it's these post-stratification weights adjusted for sample underrepresentation and non-response and minimize the bias due to disproportionate representation in the sample for age, race, and geography. Standard errors for the estimates were computed assuming unequal probability when sampling of respondents with replacement. In our univariate analyses, we estimated influenza vaccination coverage by demographic and other selected characteristics, knowledge, attitudes, behaviors, and barriers. And in our multivariable, we determined adjusted weighted prevalence of vaccination for factors associated with influenza vaccination coverage using predictive margins and prevalence ratios from multiple logistic regression models. Interaction and collinearity were evaluated and taken into account to select the final parsimonious model. The overall coverage by mid-November was 43.9%. The predicted coverage using the methodology I mentioned earlier was 49.2%. We'll see how close we match up with that with this April survey. We're going to go through a series quickly of univariate findings where we look at influenza vaccination coverage estimates by different demographics, knowledge, attitude, barriers, and behaviors. First of all, here you see that Hispanics were better vaccinated than whites, and that was the statistical difference across these groups. By education, those with a college graduate or higher were better vaccinated than those with less education. Here we see that those who were married or living together were better vaccinated than the other groups. Main reasons for not getting the 10-11 vaccination among pregnant women in the panel. The most common main reason was the idea that vaccination is unsafe for the baby or may give them the mother the flu. And the cost factor was not a major main reason for 96% of the population. Other concerns, they don't get the flu, so they can easily treat it. If they do, it's unsafe for themselves. It's not effective. They're afraid of needles or shots. Those with private or military insurance were better vaccinated than others. About 93% of this population had medical insurance. Those that did not, an N of 113 at the bottom there, only 21% were vaccinated, about half of the vaccination levels in the other groups with insurance. Trimester was not a factor. This is the trimester at the time that they were interviewed, and you can see there was no statistical difference in coverage, whatever trimester they were at, if they were pregnant during the interview. Here you see that the younger were less well vaccinated than the older, 18 to 24 versus 25 to 49. And those that reported having a high-risk condition, as listed there on the slide, in addition to being pregnant, were more likely to be vaccinated than those that did not report such. The 9-10 flu vaccination predicted vaccination in 10-11 by a very high margin, 71% to 22%, but there were 22% who were vaccinated that had not been vaccinated in 9-10. This probably may be primarily because they were pregnant at this time and knew they should be vaccinated. Provider offering vaccination made a huge difference, difference 69 to 16%. Provider recommending vaccination, 66 to 11, same picture. We combined these two to either and or both in our later modeling. Those that felt the vaccine vaccination was effective were much more likely to get vaccinated. And those who did not, those that felt the vaccine was unsafe or much less likely to get vaccinated, 11% to 59%. This is safe for the baby, same picture. And if they were not vaccinated, we ask them what the chances, they thought their chances were to get the flu, and those that thought they were a high chance to get the flu were much better vaccinated, over double those that thought they had a low chance. Those that are more worried about getting sick from vaccination were slightly more likely to get vaccinated, which may sound counterintuitive, but I think they're the ones that worry a lot about their health. So they're actually more likely to get vaccinated as well. On our model, we used all these variables that made sense. There's a few that we combined or just used one or the other for collinearity problems, and then there was the one that the trimester we didn't include, and then there was one that was health insurance, because the non-health insurance number was so low. But here you can see the prevalence, which is vaccination percentage in one group versus the other, and you can see the prevalence ratio, which is important for Hispanics. 55 versus 47 was the actual point differences, and education is shown with college grad plus versus less than high school or equal to high school, 24% increase, and chance of getting the flu if they did not vaccinate, high was 34% more likely to be vaccinated. Provider recommended or offered, 3.2 times higher to get vaccinated, 58 versus 18%, so a huge difference there. Whether they thought the vaccine was effective or not, also a huge difference, but not as major, 1.8 times, and or 80% greater, and vaccine felt to be safe or not, a large difference there, 53 versus 32, or 1.7 prevalence ratio. We looked at some interaction terms related to vaccination being recommended or offered, and in the same model we added these, and the biggest effect, although these were not statistically different, was if they felt that their chance of getting the flu was not vaccinated, and they also got a recommendation, they were five times more likely than those that didn't get a recommendation but felt the flu. They had a high risk for getting the flu. Those that felt the vaccine was not effective but were recommended or offered by the physician, three times more likely than those that were not recommended. So they may have thought the vaccine is not effective, but they get a recommendation from their provider, and they're very likely to go ahead and get vaccinated compared to those that don't have the recommendation. Safety of the vaccine, very similar. Now, for those that did not get a recommendation, if they thought that their chance of getting the flu was high, they were 2.3 times more likely to get vaccinated, even without the recommendation from the provider. This summarizes what we just went through by the points increased. Then you can see the margin of increase in vaccination was the greatest for those whose provider recommends or offers, than those whose provider doesn't in the model without interaction terms. In the model with interaction terms, pregnant women who think the vaccine is not effective and not safe, and they have a low chance of getting the flu, but whose provider recommends or offers, had a 3.4 to 5 times greater chance of getting vaccinated by mid-November 2010 compared to those whose provider did not recommend or offer the vaccine. Among pregnant women whose provider did not recommend or offer the vaccination, women who thought they had a high chance of getting influenza were 2.3 times more likely to get their influenza vaccination by mid-November than women who thought that they had a low chance of getting influenza. Conclusions. Influenza vaccination prevalence among pregnant women appeared to have more than doubled during the pandemic season of 9-10, and that level was sustained, it looks like, into 10-11. Provider's recommendation offer was very instrumental in a pregnant woman's decision to be vaccinated, but not essential for all of the patients who ended up getting vaccinated by mid-November. Perceived vaccination safety, effectiveness, and likelihood of getting the flu also played important roles in the decision to be vaccinated by mid-November. Providers need to recommend and or offer influenza vaccination to their patients who are pregnant during the influenza season. Pregnant women need to better understand that influenza vaccine is safe for them and their baby and is effective at preventing the serious outcomes that they are at high risk to experience from influenza. Thank you very much.